And this is the episode where I get canceled for my guest, and he doesn't even say anything spicy. So Cody here, this is the final episode from the 2023 Fight Laugh Feast Conference, and the first part is Doug Wilson of Moscow, Idaho, infamy or fame, whichever way you look at it. And he let me ask him some pretty blunt questions, and he answered them. So there you go. If you're going to cancel me, then fine. Second part is my friend Greg Moore, and he has a podcast called Dead Men Walking. It's worth a listen. Go give him a listen after you listen to part two of this. So here we go. Doug Wilson, Greg Moore, final episode from the Fight Laugh Feast Conference. Evolution is welcome to the Westminster Effects Doxology Podcast. We explore popular practices, songs, and ideas in the modern church world in the light of sola scriptura and tota scriptura. I'm Cody Fields, the president of Westminster Effects. Go buy stuff for your guitar at westminstereffects.com and join the discussion in the Westminster Effects Doxology Podcast Lounge. Give us 5 stars, share the show, comment, subscribe, etc., etc., etc. What number is this at the conference? This is episode number 8 from the 2023 Fight Laugh Feast Conference, and across from me I have he who must not be named in the Reformed pub, one Pastor Doug Wilson from Moscow, Idaho. Doug, welcome to the Westminster Effects Doxology Podcast.
Good to be with you.
So, let's just jump in, shall we? Right.
Jump in.
You're like the post-mill guy, or as Keith Foskey says, hashtag fancy Amil, right?
Yeah, fancy Amil.
One of the things that we often don't hear talked about, just to cut right to it, is suffering within postmillennialism. There are some who will frame the argument as, well, postmillennialism is just word of faith without the word. You know, it's basically a prosperity gospel sans the name it claim it. So what role does suffering have in a postmillennial framework in the Christian life?
It has the same role it has in all Christian theology.
Yeah. Could you pull the mic up just a tad and speak into the logo?
Sure.
Yeah. Into the side, into the logo. Yep. Perfect. There we go.
There we go.
Yep.
So it has the same role that it has in all Christian theology.
Yeah.
So the postmillennialist has the same verses.
Right.
You know, everybody, Jesus says, if anyone wants to follow after me, let him take up his cross. Right. So.
Yeah.
Postmillennials have to do that also.
Right.
It's not like a John Owen said, he should not think he makes any progress in godliness who walks not daily over the bellies of his own lusts.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a thing, right?
Right.
So
basically, it is literally what the Bible says.
It's what the Bible says, and we believe we're in total Bible Christians, so we believe those too. And someone says, yeah, but you don't talk about it as much as, you know, you're more about the theology of the crown than you are the theology of the cross.
Right.
Right. That'd be the charge. But Paul says that it's through much tribulation that we must enter the kingdom of God.
Mm-hmm.
So we pray for the kingdom to come.
Mm-hmm.
But the kingdom is not going to come without lots of big convulsions and tumult and persecutions.
Kind of what we're seeing going on right now.
What we're seeing going on right now. So basically, I don't believe that the kingdom is going to arrive to the polite background sound of golf applause.
Right, right.
So I believe that the kingdom is going to come through much turmoil.
Like what the Bible says.
Like what the Bible says, and like what we're seeing now.
Mm-hmm.
But someone says, well, if you believe in a golden age that's coming, then how will those Christians who live in that golden age, how will they apply all these verses?
Right.
Well, I would say if I were to talk about your life, Mr. Critic, your life to an average Christian living in 500 A.D.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. According to him, you're living in a golden age.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But you still have doctor's appointments.
But we also have doctor's appointments.
Right.
We have air conditioning and all that compared to them.
Correct. And so we even have a joke about it. We call it first world suffering.
Right, right,
okay.
Right.
Our first world problems.
Yep.
Okay. Well, why can't we have post-mill problems? We have post-mill problems where we have to trust God.
Mm-hmm.
So 1,000 years from now, in, let's say, the golden, let's say all the lion lies down with the lamb and stuff. Mm-hmm. And a man who dies when he's 100 will be considered accursed.
Right.
He still dies.
Right. Yeah, he still dies. His family still has to mourn his death.
Right.
Yeah.
They all go to the funeral. You at the end of the church age,
mm-hmm.
Will people still have to die of something?
Right, yeah. Right, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Will there be a worrisome doctor's diagnosis that you have to trust God for?
Right.
Well, so every Christian has to put one foot in front of the other, trusting God for what might happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's no less true of postmillennialists than it is of any other Christian.
Right. So how do we reel in, maybe that's the wrong wording, but that's the wording I'm going to use for now. How do we reel in the post-mill guys, the cultural transformation guys, who effectively think that this is going to happen in the next 3 weeks?
Right.
It's kind of like a cage stage post-millennialism.
Yeah, it's the problem there is an over-realized eschatology.
Right, which is what we're accused of already.
Right, right. And so what I would say is don't judge. Mature post-millennialists want to say that we currently are living in the days of the early church.
Right.
Right, that we're still the early church era. There's thousands of years to go.
Right.
There's a lot of work to do. And so we don't believe that it's all going to be wrapped up in the next 3 weeks.
Right.
It just is not. It just is not.
And it's not. It's almost like a holdover from like the Second Great Awakening and revivalism and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
They expected, what was the college, Asbury? Where they had the supposed revival and it flamed out in a few weeks. And it's, oh, well, this is going to be it. And then maybe someone comes to this conference. Oh, this is going to be it.
Right.
It's almost like dispensational date setting in a post-millennial context.
But this is not a post-mill failing or a dispensational failing.
Right.
It's a human failing.
Right.
Everybody wants to see what they believe about history coming to pass in their day.
Right. Right. And the Amills do it. The historic pre-mills do it. Like literally everybody does this somehow.
Right.
And you can even apply that to talking about a human problem. You can apply this to your favorite baseball team.
Yeah. This year.
Yeah.
We're gonna take it this year.
This is gonna be the year. And I'm still mourning. I'm a Braves fan, and I'm mourning that loss right now. So moving on from that, so I don't have to relive that dumpster fire of a divisional series. So you posted. Yeah. I don't know if you're aware of this, but every now and then you start a fire.
Okay.
And I did clear this with you for asking this. So everybody out there, I'm not asking the gotcha questions or anything. But you posted a quote from the Auburn Avenue Chronicles on your blog, dougwills.com, blog and mayblog, with the heading Discuss Among Yourselves. And the federal vision freakout types went ballistic over this. So I'll read the quote and then...
Yeah.
Tell me what's going on here. So you said, or rather, you quoted this, what is regeneration? That is an existential and experimental reality. God takes away a heart of stone and replaces it with a heart of flesh. Now, when does regeneration occur? According to the traditional Ordo, regeneration is first, then repentance, then faith, then justification. Imputation arrives with justification. What is the righteousness that this new heart has, both experientially and practically? It is an infused righteousness. Regeneration is not imputed, right? Regeneration is a change of heart from an unrighteous heart that hates God to a righteous but still imperfect heart that loves Him, repents of sin, and believes in Him. At the end of the day, this means infused righteousness as the instrument of imputed righteousness. So, can you explain that a little more for the people who have... soiled themselves.
Yeah. So, and this is very important.
Mm-hmm.
In that quote, I used the phrase, according to the traditional Ordo.
Yes.
Okay.
The Ordo Salutis, the order of salvation.
Okay. Now, if you believe in the Ordo as a chronological Ordo, stopwatch Ordo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Click, regeneration is first, then repentance, then faith, then justification.
Right.
Okay,
right.
That's the problem that I'm outlining there is a problem for the traditional Ordo stopwatch guys.
Gotcha, okay.
It's not my problem. It's not my problem.
Right.
Right? So what they're, and this is, it's very important to point this out. What the traditional ordo is meant to preserve is the sovereignty of God and salvation.
Right.
So the regeneration happens first, and it's a monergistic act of God. God just gives the new birth to a man.
Like 1 Peter 1, he has caused us to be born again.
Right. So that's the truth that the ordo is seeking to preserve.
Right.
But what you don't want to do is get caught up in become the victim of the metaphor where you think, oh, I went for 5 minutes regenerate but not justified.
And, right.
Or I went for 5 minutes repentant but not believing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there's a problem with the chronological, this happens, then this happens, then this happens.
Mm-hmm.
What the ordo is attempting to do is emphasize the supremacy of God, the sovereignty of God in the whole shooting match.
Right.
All right. Now, this problem is addressed by Richard Gaffin, I think.
Okay.
And also by after I posted that and there was the freak out, I think it was Bob, my colleague Jared Longshore, did a blog post showing how Bovink addresses the same challenge, the same problem.
Yeah. And nobody's questioning Bovink.
Nobody's questioning Bovink, right? So and what I'm saying, I can't gesture on the audio here, but me and Bovink.
Like this.
Like me and Richard Gaffin, like this. So if you say... the whole thing is done. Everything is accomplished by means of union with Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So God so unites us to Christ, and the whole shooting match, everything is entailed in that, the repentance, the faith, the justification, and the regeneration.
Mm-hmm.
Then you don't have the billiard ball causation of one ball hitting the other. And then, right. So when I say I'm not maintaining that infused righteousness is the instrument of justification.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that if you limit yourself to the traditional ordo and that's your only metaphor, that's your only metaphor, and it's the stopwatch metaphor, then you have to answer the problem.
Right.
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 So the question is not whether I believe infused righteousness is the instrument of justification.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is whether William Perkins believed that infused righteousness was the instrument of justification.
I see, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the one who sort of gave us the that traditional lineup. And I'm saying that traditional lineup is good so far as it goes and is true with regard to the essential thing it illustrates, but it's insufficient to account for all the problems.
You're effectively trying to expand on what's already been laid down and say we can make this a little bit better.
Right.
Now, then... So you've explained that. How then, since there are, how do I say this? There are going to be people who will still call BS on that.
Right.
Right. Right. So how do you deal with those who you explain something, you say something, you explain and clarify, they still don't like it.
Right.
Even though you've explained it adequately. How then do you go on with your life deciding whether to respond again or to just ignore it or to burn a bridge or what have you?
If the person is basically an anti-FV troll and he says, well, I don't believe you. You're just shifty. So the language, what's thrown at me is...
I have people in mind who are going to tell me exactly that.
they say that I'm just being shifty and I'm a wordsmith and I just fool around. I say something inflammatory and then I slither my way out of it.
Right. And people have even told me, you only like to read Wilson because like I have a journalism degree and so I'm also a little bit of a word nerd.
Okay.
And so it's like I appreciate the wordsmithiness and they'll say you just like him because he's good with words and whatever.
You
so.
Say you can say also because I studied journalism, I know how to read.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So if there's an a priori determination that at the end of this process Wilson's going to be an enemy. Then of course you're going to have to explain it that way.
Right.
So if someone says he's lying. That was what he just said on your podcast.
Right.
What Wilson just said is orthodox. Mm-hmm. But he's a liar. or on the charitable end, Wilson has a hodgepodge of theological convictions, and he's confused. I'll give you that he's sincere, maybe, but he's muddled. Muddled up
mainly on baptism, but.
But we won't go there unless you want to.
I will lose that argument. I know.
So either I'm muddled or I'm malevolent,
right?
And so I would say, well, maybe
malevolent and even like you'd have nefarious. To make the case of nefarious too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say, look, maybe theology is not as simplistic as you're making it out to be.
Right.
Right. Maybe. And so certain things are not, certain layers of theology are not really tweetable.
Really?
The book of Proverbs is tweetable. There are certain things that truth can be communicated that way, but not all truth.
Right.
So
there are truths that require long-form communication.
Correct.
And then there are some that require direct communication, like let's have a conversation about this.
Right. Now, what I would do in this situation is if someone says, yeah, Wilson, you're lying again, and that comes across my Twitter feed,
yeah.
I click on the profile and followers, there's three followers, probably mom and sisters.
Or Russian bots.
Or Russian bots or something. If the person just calls me a liar or calls me a cloth head, and they've got three followers, I don't worry about it. I just don't worry about it.
Yeah.
If I click on the profile and the person's got 15,000 followers and they say Wilson's lying, the reason I don't answer the troll is because if I answer the troll, I've just made his day.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you have to answer every troll.
Yeah. I've handed him the microphone. Why would I want to hand that guy the microphone?
Right.
But if I click on the profile and there's 15,000 followers, he just handed me the microphone.
Right. Right.
Okay. So I will answer that guy so long as he lets me.
Yeah.
But there's going to become a time in this, and I would say the best example of that would be R. Scott Clark. Mm. So if I'm a cloth head, or if I'm so obviously malevolent, then surely somebody at one of our great reform seminaries should be willing to debate me.
Yeah.
Right? Because the Reformation was all about public disputation. Well, let's settle this.
Literally how it started.
Let's settle this. Let's have a big let's have a debate.
Yeah.
And the people who, there are people who want to challenge my intelligence or my learning or my integrity, but they don't do it in the open. They are not willing to sit down and debate because I'm Reformed. I'm a Westminsterian Reformed guy,
right?
And I think a debate would reveal that a lot of them are not.
Oh, shots fired a little bit, right?
So I believe that. I just boil it down to that. If you want to say that, come out in public. We'll set up a debate.
It's kind of thinking strategically and tactically on all of the levels of the response.
Right.
Where me being explicitly Christian in the music world,
right?
Just being Christian, baseline Christian, gets me some trolls every now and then, and then I have to evaluate. And for whatever reason, most of my troll comments come from Instagram for some reason. Who'd have thought? But evaluating, is this guy even worth engaging with? And a lot of times it's I'm good.
You do a cost benefit analysis and say I'm gonna save my breath for walking uphill.
One last real quick question. Productivity.
Yes.
I know that's not your most recent book by any stretch of the imagination, but productivity, for one, that helped me with my business, for one.
Oh, I'm glad.
Give the people a little rundown of productivity, if you could.
So productivity is basically the idea that the tasks you have in front of you are not so big if you cut them up into bite-sized pieces. Mm-hmm. And just realize that a little bit done daily is going to get an awful lot accomplished.
Right.
Over time. You're going to be surprised. So if you're a writer and you just say, I'm working on this book and I'm going to write 100 words a day.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, well, that's not very much. You know, you could write 100 words in 5 or 10 minutes.
Right.
But then you sit down the next day and do another 100 words. After 10 days, that's 1,000 words.
Yep.
Right. Right. Yep. And it starts to stack up pretty pretty rapidly.
And if you are doing 100 words a day, well, what's stopping you from – you're going to get in a groove at some point,
yeah.
120, 150, 200.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you round into the straight at the end and you say, oh, I've only got 5,000 words to finish this book.
Yeah.
And you take the weekend and finish it out.
Right.
So, and you can read books the same way. You can accomplish tasks in your workshop the same way.
Right.
Just divide it up and divide and conquer.
Yeah. And that's also heavily relying on the Protestant work ethic, on the fact that our work does matter.
Right.
And that it's going to mean something even in the long run.
Right.
This is also a postmillennial thing. This
yeah.
is this
back
isn't
to that.
This isn't you start writing 100 words a day if you expect to get raptured out tomorrow.
Right. Right.
So, well, where can people find He Who Must Not Be Named?
Yeah, they can find me. So that we set this up, if you go to my blog, which is dougwills.com, and the title of the blog is Blog and May Blog.
Yep.
If you go there and you open up the front page, you can find a portal to pretty much everything I'm involved with.
Which is a lot.
Which is a lot. NSA and Logos School and ACCS and Canon Press and so forth. You can find an avenue into pretty much everything that I do.
Okay, perfect. So,
all right.
DougWills.com and then the portal to all of the things.
Yes, all the things.
All of the things. Well, thanks for listening to the Westminster Effects Doxology Podcast. Go love God, love your neighbor, and make some music. We'll see you next time. And for those of you who haven't left, who haven't canceled your subscriptions and unfollowed me and all of that, stick around for Greg Moore from Dead Men Walking. Welcome to the Westminster Effects Doxology Podcast, where we explore popular praxis songs and ideas in the modern church world in the light of sola scriptura and tota scriptura. I'm Cody Fields, the president of Westminster Effects. Go buy stuff for your guitar at westminstereffects.com. You can join the discussion at the Westminster Effects Doxology Podcast Lounge on Facebook and give us 5 stars. Go share the show, blah, blah, blah. This is the 9th. Episode from the Fight Laugh Feast Conference, and my voice is getting exhausted, but directly across from me, I am joined by one Greg Moore of the Dead Men Walking podcast. Greg.
Hey, Cody. How you doing?
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
We're at the end of the sprint, huh?
I know. I'm in the same boat you are.
Yeah. We met last year.
Yep.
You interviewed me.
Yeah.
It's my turn to return the favor.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah, there we go.
I'm on the other side of the microphone.
Exactly.
Nice.
Exactly. And you've been doing a lot of the other side.
Yeah.
The proper interviewees.
I guess we'd call it that. Yeah.
Side. Yeah. Tell us about Dead Men Walking for those who aren't familiar with you.
First of all, I got to say that intro that you just did was awesome.
Thank you.
Very smooth.
Thank you.
I kind of lost myself. I forgot that I was actually on the show for a minute. I thought I was listening. And I'm like, ooh, this is going to be a good episode. Who's on?
Yeah.
I'm on.
Oh, yeah, you're on.
Yeah. But, yeah, my name's Greg Moore. I do Dead Men Walking podcast. We've been doing that since April 2020. And just started it as a passion, talking about theology, culture, politics. Went to the first Fight Laugh Feast conference in October of 2020. And it kind of grew from there. Been to a couple other conferences, and we put out an episode once a week. And we just have people on that are, interesting, and scholars, theologians. We've had congressmen, comics, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so,
a little bit of everything, really.
A little bit of everything. Whatever I tell people, I'm very selfish. It's whatever I'm kind of interested in that week or studying through.
That's pretty much what this has turned into as well.
And hopefully it's beneficial for the listeners.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. And so you've done every Fight Laugh Feast conference. You're kind of the OG podcast guy, right?
I think so. That's the reputation I'm getting now.
Yeah, where I started coming the second one, one in Lebanon.
Yep.
And then where was the one last year?
I know. I'm already drawing a blank.
Oh.
It was in Tennessee somewhere, wasn't it?
Knoxville.
Knoxville. And then there was one in South Dakota as well.
Yeah, and I did not do that one. Ugh. I'm that's a long way.
Man, I got such a bad case of COVID coming back on the plane.
Oh, really?
Oh, me and at the time, my co-host, he was feeling bad the last day. And then on the plane, I started coughing. And then it was 11 days of severe COVID coming back from that one. But it was a good rally.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd do it again.
Yeah, the last time I got COVID was at a trade show.
Yeah.
From my friend Simon Campling of G7th Capos. G7th is a British company, and I had to remind him that 1776 was a long time ago. You don't have to start with this biological warfare.
Right.
So Dead Man Walking, it's basically whatever you want to talk about.
Well, it's from a Reformed biblical worldview. Right. But most of the time,
biblical
it's something
as far as Presbyterianism goes.
Hey, now, baptize them babies as Chocolate Knox would say, right? But it's usually 90% of the episodes have a guest. There's a few where it's just me rambling about, but for the most part, we have someone on that's usually learned in a certain subject.
Right.
You know, or I'll see something. Like, I think the current episode right now, Chris Larson, who's the executive president of Ligonier, was on.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw him respond to Elon Musk on Deep Time. And I said, and I messaged him, and I said, I would love to sit down and talk to you, and let's just go through the very first point of the Westminster. What does it mean to glorify God and enjoy Him forever? That's our sign-off on our podcast. And I said, yeah. So it was one of those things where just a tweet sparked something, and we had a nice 45-minute, hour-long conversation about the very first question and answer in the Westminster Catechism and what it means and what deep time is. And his parents both worked at NASA, and you just get into these
conversations. Yeah, that escalated quickly.
Yeah, so he kind of was in that space anyway. So those kind of things just kind of grow into these organic episodes, and then we try to have some fun stuff too. We have a Fresh 10 segment where we ask 10 fresh questions to more our theologians that they don't normally get asked, you know.
Right. The Bar podcast and Dwayne Atkinson. Yeah. Dwayne used to live 10 minutes away from me. And
I love Dwayne.
And my late Pomeranian Fozzie actually bit him on the ankle one time when he came over to record a podcast because that dog was a little bit racist. But I don't even remember where I was going with that.
Oh, but Dwayne is just like
he is shredded,
good shape. And I'll say this, and I'll say it on every podcast where Dwayne comes up. 3 weeks into doing my podcast, 3 episodes, he messaged me, said, hey, can I call you? I listened to all 3 episodes. You got something. I want to support you. Anything you ever need, you let me know. He's just that dude.
He did the exact same thing with me. And he's also responsible for the 2716.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, he had John Cooper on the bar, and I texted him completely innocently and said, man, that was an awesome episode. And he said, thanks, I can't give you his number.
Yeah.
He said, but I will give him your link. And then he sent it on to the rest of the band, and then Seth hit me up, and the rest is history. So yeah. I don't even remember where we were going with that.
Good dude. Doesn't matter. This is what my podcast like. We just get off on tangents, and we don't need to be organized.
And with us being here on Podcasters Row and hanging out with Keith Foskey, this has been the entire week.
I know. Yes, Keith is down here, your Calvinist on Twitter, and you guys probably, if you know the name, it's from the denominational videos. So we just got done shooting a behind-the-scenes video, so you guys will be seeing something new from him too here at the Ark Encounter. Yep. But yeah, it's been good getting to be right next to you. I like that we get to visit and hang out, and it's been good. Yeah,
and it has been an exercise in not taking ourselves too seriously as well.
100%.
I have laughed until my sides hurt, particularly when we ate at the buffet here at the Ark Encounter.
Yeah, that's it. They just ate there again.
Again?
Yeah, John and Keith. And I go, why did you guys go back?
Why? Yeah.
I don't know. They go, and our Sabbath meal's there. I'm like, I'm not. I don't want to eat there twice, let alone 3 times. I mean, it wasn't that bad, but it's buffet food.
Right.
And I'm a picky eater.
Right.
You know, I like good food.
Yeah.
It was, it was a lot of instant mashed potatoes and macaroni and cheese.
Yeah. Which has its place.
Of course.
It has its place.
Comfort food.
Just like, you know, stuff like gas station nachos.
Absolutely.
Or even, there is no place for gas station sushi. That's just a death sentence, if we're being honest.
That's instant bathroom time.
Tell me about this shirt that you're wearing. Talking about not taking ourselves too seriously. This is a thing of beauty, and I want one.
I will send you one. They're on our website at dmwpodcast.com. Shameless self-promotion.
Yes.
It says,
this entire podcast is a shameless self-promotion for me. Let's be honest.
Okay. It says, we don't say the F word in our family, and it has a picture of Stephen Furtick. And funny story. So here at the Ark Encounter, you have to ride in on a bus. They kind of, you know, they have like the buses that come back and forth to the front door.
Oh no! Did somebody say something?
And we're sitting on the bus, and you're shoulder to shoulder with 50 other people. And there's a group of the Fight Laugh Feast guys because they have the placards.
Yep.
Standing off to the left, and he goes, "What does your shirt say?" And I tell him, you know, and he laughs. He goes, "Oh, that's great, Furtick." There's this lady sitting directly across from me with her son, and she's. I don't know, 48 years old. She's got her coach bag. She looks very big Eva, kind of, you know. And she goes, wait, what? Furtick? Oh, I like him. And then just kind of looked down at the ground and didn't look me in the eye for the rest of the four-minute bus ride. And I went, oh, the shirt's for you. But we're a little tongue-in-cheek at Dead Man Walking. So we have, probably my most popular one is Wine'em, Dine'em, Romans, Nine'em.
Yeah. I remember that from last year.
Yeah, we have that one. We also have one that says, only the weak eat vegetables. We take a nice verse out of context and make fun of the vegetarians.
I haven't seen that one.
I have it with me. I haven't worn it. But that's
fantastic.
So anytime we think of something snarky, I just make a shirt, throw it up there. And if you guys want them, dmwpodcast.com. And it supports the show. Allows us to do stuff like this, hang out with you, come down to conferences.
Right.
We're not retiring off of it.
Right. If there is anything that Reformed folk are good at, it's being snarky.
Yeah. Well, that's why, like, Reformed Funny Moments, I don't know if you're familiar with him.
No.
His name is, it's slipping me. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. His name is slipping my mind. He's been on the podcast. I've been on his. But the Reformed Funny Moments channel on YouTube.
If you had Doug Wilson on 15 other times, maybe you'd remember his name.
Yeah. I get keys to that, too. Are you just a Doug Wilson podcast? No, we just like talking about stuff. But he does, you got to check him out. It's absolutely funny. He takes all the funny moments in conferences and stuff and mashes them together. It's called Reformed Funny Moments.
That's amazing.
He just did it as I'm going to put this together and put it up there. And he puts the first one up there and it's like, 800,000 views in the first week. And it's like, because one, Reformed guys are funny.
Yeah.
I will stand by. They're some of the funniest guys I know here. Sarcastic humor.
Yeah.
You know, all this. And then when you mash it all up, you got RC joking with, MacArthur and, all these panels from Ligonier and, the Shepherd's conferences.
One of my favorite ones was toward the end of Sproul's life when he was answering questions via video.
Yeah.
And MacArthur comes up.
Yeah, that's a good clip.
And Sproul says, that is the dumbest question I have ever heard in my life, just so he could take a dig at MacArthur.
Yeah. Well, it kind of reflects, too, that, when you read through even in parts of Ecclesiastes where Solomon's talking about, everything being obviously vanity and like a vapor, but then he has parts where he's talking about laughter being good, having relationships. It's this crazy thing where laughter is a good thing. It's a gift from God. And when you can get together and kind of chide each other and roast look, and guys do that a lot anyway, right? You're not a really true friend if you're not making fun of your friend a little
exactly.
bit.
Exactly.
But in good luck.
Or a lot.
Yeah. And that's kind of what you get when you come together in these conferences here at Fight Left Feast and other things like that. We just love each other, so you got to joke with each other,
Yeah.
But yeah, check out Reform Funny Moments. I'm giving him a plug because he's good. He's a good dude.
So shameless, not self-promo. I don't even know what that is. Shameless plug for someone else. I don't know.
Well, he features me a lot on there, so it's still a shameless plug.
Good.
Still a shameless plug.
Yeah, still a shameless plug.
Are you kidding me, dude? I'm in promo mode right now. This is conference time.
Well, let's get even more promo-y. You're an elected official.
Yeah, but no one's here in my district, so I could care less about that.
Right.
But unless you're listening in Monroe County.
I'm pretty sure you might be the first elected official to come on the podcast.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
First time for everything.
And you're what, county commissioner of where?
County commissioner in Monroe County. Ran in 2016.
Monroe County is?
Michigan.
Okay.
Yeah.
If people couldn't tell by your voice.
Yeah. I've been told I have a Midwest accent. I don't know what that really means, but...
It means you don't sound like you're from the South.
Yeah, because I pick up on your accent a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
Which people in South Carolina tell me that I don't sound like I'm Southern. Now, my wife tells me when I get mad and cuss a little bit.
Yeah. Well, just saying it like that a little bit.
Exactly.
That's for me, that's a little different. So maybe, we have a couple states that separate us so we can pick up on it. But got into that and ran in 2016. Then I've ran every 2 years since then. And Lord willing, we'll continue to hopefully do what I can to bring justice to the county level and protect the righteous and bring justice to evildoers.
So you're a Christian countyist?
Yeah, I'm a Christian countyist instead of nationalist. That's funny.
Yeah.
There's something there. I'm getting, that's good though.
That's your next t-shirt.
Yeah. We're going to roll that around. Christian Countyist.
Yeah, so you're obviously just cramming down your morality on Monroe County, Michigan, right?
No, not really. You don't have to cram it down, but you just have to stand strong. And it's kind of like a jury where you have one guy that thinks it's not guilty and everyone else thinks guilty or vice versa.
Yep.
You can wear down a board pretty easy if you're just persistent and you present good arguments and you don't budge.
Yeah.
And I've done that on a few issues, and Lord willing, we'll continue to do it if it's the right thing to do. So,
Awesome. The extent of my involvement in politics, I told you about my last minute write-in campaign for State House in 2016, and I got 7 votes.
Yeah. Good start.
And then there was a time, I think it was 2019, when my county council decided to, they had the dumbest proposal ever.
No, a government had a dumb proposal.
And
never heard of such a thing.
Yeah, so there were a couple of shootings at nightclubs and stuff like that. So they had this just ridiculous proposed ordinance that would, one, require anyone who is going to have a musical performance in the county to undergo a background check with the sheriff's office. And on top of that, if there was a fight or a shooting, then the venue would be held liable for it. And on top of that, if the sheriff's deputy, what was the phrase? Something along the lines of, the sheriff's deputy thinks that something's going on, they can shut you down until pending further investigation.
Wow.
And so,
whose brainchild was that? Get them out of office, man.
I honestly think it was the sheriff's idea.
It was the sheriff's idea that he has full discretion just to think you're committing a crime so he can do something? Yeah,
right.
That makes sense.
Right. And so, obviously, the uproar in the music scene was deafening. Yeah. But I decided, you know, one, none of these people are really arguing anything other than, that's not fair and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Right. And they when I got there, they had already tabled the discussion on it. They said, we're not going to do this. But I was like, I got stuff prepared. I got 3 minutes. I'm going to go for it anyway.
Right.
And I laid out the most theonomic case possible. I reminded them that before God, per Romans 13, they were his servants, et cetera. And I walked through the constitutional amendments that were being violated by this. And those constitutional amendments, by the way, were rooted in this part of the Mosaic Law. Et cetera, et cetera. And by the time I got done, they were like, that was the most biblical thing anyone's ever said here, which was funny, but it's also sad. It's like, no, like, Christians, where are we?
Because
I'm in the buckle of the Bible Belt.
Right.
Like, what are we doing? Why are we not arguing biblically?
Yeah, that is sad. Well, I'm glad you did that, too, because I've always said the number one reason why most local, state, and federal politicians get away with things is because people are just apathetic. More on local and state level.
Right, right.
People will pay attention to the federal level where they really can't change anything.
Yep.
But they'll ignore their state reps.
It's entertaining.
That's what I mean. It's entertainment.
Up there.
So a local politician loves when you don't pay attention because they're just doing whatever they want over there. As soon as you come and show up at a board meeting, you talk for 3 minutes, you show up the next week, you bring a few more people with you, they start going, oh, wait, what's going on? People are paying attention.
You start reading from the books that they have in the elementary school library.
Right. We're seeing that now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm glad that's finally catching on because for 12 years I've been telling people, go run for school board, run for your library board, run for your city council, run for your board of trustees. Like, you have to do that because these people sit over, like in the school board, millions of dollars, curriculum, how they transport kids back and forth to school, all kinds of stuff. And it's a free position. It's not paid. Some pay a little bit. But everyone just goes, it doesn't matter. And then now look where we are today. Now school boards are very important. They're books and curriculum and library and all that.
All politics is local. And the left has understood that for decades.
Yeah.
That's why we have George Soros-funded attorney generals and district attorneys, like particularly in, you know, places like Los Angeles and San Francisco and so on.
Yeah.
Like, because they understand that the real action is at that level and not so much at the federal level. There's plenty that goes on at the federal level, but you're not changing, like, what my two senators are Tim Scott and Lindsey Graham.
Yeah.
Come on.
Oh, Lindsey Graham.
Yeah. I have a story about that later. But
he's definitely got the right first name because I don't know what he identifies as.
I have a story for you.
A rhino or a liberal.
Yeah.
Tell me the story. And then
I'm not going to record.
Okay, not right here. Okay. Very quickly, too, I'm glad you said that about the George Show is funded stuff, because in 2016, you can go back on my Facebook and look at this because I posted about it. There was an infograph, and the GOP, the national GOP, mm-hmm. put out this infograph, and they said, look at all the seats that Obama has lost under his presidentship. Under mm-hmm. Obama, yeah, the Democrats say he won two in a row in this, but he's lost this many state reps, this many state senate, this many secretary of state, right? But then mm-hmm. the graph right next to it showed he had picked up all the AGs. He had picked up most of the treasurers in each state, which control the money. He had picked up a lot of the local judges were mm-hmm. Democrats, where they were partisan.
Yep.
Some states are nonpartisan when you run for judge. And I looked at that, and I tweeted, and I posted that in 2016, and I said, we got the Republicans bragging about picking up state House and Senate seats, but look at all what the Democrats did at the local level. And you go,
yep.
and I said, that's where it's important. That's where, that's yep. interpret the laws, controls the money at the local level. Mm-hmm. And, whatever. It got 4 likes and someone said, you're nuts. And now, almost 8 years later, we're talking about, we're having real effects with yep. some of these laws going through the local, ADs and prosecutor's office, and they control the local.
Yep.
So, just much like how the Bible is very, very adamant about the nuclear family and the community being the first two things that are extremely important.
Yep.
That's why it's important in politics, because God created it that way. Everything comes out of the nuclear family and the immediate community.
And even some of the positions that we think don't matter really do. Like, if you're familiar with Jerry Boyer.
Why is that name sound familiar?
He wrote The Maker versus the Takers.
Yep, yep, yep.
Does wealth management and stuff like that. And his podcast, Meeting of Minds, like, he'll have on state treasurers.
Yeah.
With them suing guys like BlackRock, Vanguard, and Target for their DEI nonsense and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, no, like, these guys should also be held accountable. It's not only governors. It's not only state reps or even U.S. reps. Like,
yeah,
other things matter than simply legislating things, like the management of funds, which is a lot of what you do, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
that stewardship matters, particularly if they're going to take it from you at gunpoint.
Yeah. It was funny. There was a state rep that I followed in Michigan, and then after he termed out, because we have term limits, he went to the State Board of Education. I went, man, I like this guy. I like what he stands for. I like what he's doing. So I messaged him last year. I said, would you come on the podcast? Because now he's the president of he's the chairman of the State Board of Education. And then he goes, I've been listening to your podcast for 6 months. I've been reformed for 20 years. And I was like, I knew I liked you. So we got to have a whole conversation about theology and politics when his name's Tom McMillan.
Wait, that's allowed?
Yeah, right. Tom McMillan. So go look up that one if you're interested in politics and theology, because we got a really good look into what they're doing in Michigan with this whole book situation, too. Mm. Unfortunately, he's outnumbered, I think, 3-2 Dem to Republican on our state board. But boy, does he put up a stink and make it hard for them to do anything, which if you're in the minority, you have to do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just politics. But
that's all you can do.
Yeah.
And sometimes the most effective tactic in the moment to get to the ultimate strategy, your ultimate goal, is to just make a stink.
Yeah.
Just be irritating, which I'm really good at.
Yeah, I'm good at it too. That's why we're friends, man.
Yeah, exactly.
We can be irritating when we want all the time. I like it.
Like, even with, I'm perfectly willing to ask people questions that nobody wants to ask. Like when Jason Farley was over here, I was like, let's talk about the whole Baptist transgender comments.
He's like,
And with when Wilson was here, it's like, I want to talk about the thing that you posted that pissed off everybody.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay.
Yeah.
And that's all it takes a lot of times with most people, funny enough. And that's one of the interesting things with you. That's where I was going when I lost my train of thought
all
like
right.
10 minutes ago.
10 minutes ago, we're back, baby.
So many of these people, like Larson or whoever, they're actually really accessible.
100%.
All you got to do is send them, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter message, email, whatever.
Yeah.
And they'll just be like, yeah, I'll come on. Whatever.
So anyone listening right now that's doing a podcast, everyone, I just had someone go, how do you get all these guys on your podcast. I'm not a pastor, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I'm not a big deal. You ask, but it's in the way you ask too. I do have an official little press kit made up with past guests. People want to see if I don't know this guy. I want to know who's been on there, where it's, yep. and that helps. But I really approach it humbly and go, look, there are Joe Rogans out there that get 11 million views, and there's guys that just started that get 5 views. I'm somewhere more towards the 5 views, right? Maybe 60,000 mm-hmm. downloads a month, so we're growing, yep. but we're by no means is this going to be like, you're helping me out, first of all. Right. I'm not helping you out. Let's just put it that way. Right. But I do have a very loyal audience,
yep.
and I want to bring value to them. And I think you talking about this subject will bring value. That's my whole goal. It's not to promote or I want to be friends with or, oh, hey, I had this guy on. I want you to come on and talk in your expertise and bring value to the audience. And normally when I present it that way, and I say, if you're not the decision maker, send me to your people who are, and we'll schedule through them so we're not taking up your time because everyone's time is important, right? Not just big names, but every guest like that. And 90% of the time I get a response back and go, yeah, absolutely, let's do it.
Yeah.
The only two that I've had fall through, and they're actually two big names, you'll laugh at this because I actually talked about it on an episode. I broke my own rule. Never talk about upcoming guests until it's in the bank because stuff just happens. But I was excited. I reached out to who's the guy with the song? Anthony Oliver Anthony.
Yeah.
And I got him the day it came out and it was trending. And I went, oh, this is going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
Yep, I'll do it. I got the text message. I'll do it. Or the Facebook message. I'm good. I said, cool. We set up the date. All right. 5 days from now. 3 days later. Hey, he's under new management. I'm his PR guy. He's only doing a couple podcasts. And I went, oh, come on. And then, of course, the couple podcasts are Jordan Peterson and Joe Rogan. So how could you compete with that, right? And I'd mentioned something in the interim. I said, we think we're going to have him on. When it gets bone rule. So that one, and when I was at the Fight Laugh Feast, one of Ben Shapiro's publicists said, we'll see what we can do if you're already in Tennessee, because it was at the time he was moving there. And I want to talk to him about moving from Los Angeles and setting up in Tennessee.
Well, also shoehorning in a gospel presentation, right?
Exactly. Absolutely.
Now, bow your head, close your eyes.
Yeah. So some of those guys, those are bigger names that, they say, no, we can't do it. And rightly so. You know, who am I? Right. But for the most part, guys like Doug Wilson, guys mm-hmm. like James White, guys mm-hmm. like Tom Askell and Josh Boyce. And, you just present and go, look, I just need 30 minutes and we want to, talk. And it's because I appreciate what you do. And I'm not a gotcha podcast either.
Right.
There was a couple episodes where we had some issues where I gave some pushback to like Dr. Sam Storms because he was defending Bethel Church mm-hmm. and
he's also good buddies with Mike Bickle and some of those guys.
And he just said, Bill Johnson isn't a theologian. He's a pastor. And I went, what?
There's a difference?
Yeah. Theology is knowing God. And if you're a pastor, you should know God, right? So there's been a few moments like that. But for the most part.
implying Bill Johnson does not know God.
I know. That's what
we'll
we said.
We'll go there. Yeah.
And it went a little viral. And look at. If I was chasing numbers, I would go, okay, I would lure people in and we would do gotcha moments and we would clip it and you would go, ooh, I got this guy saying this or that. Mm-hmm. I'm not about that. I really want to bring value to listeners to glorify God, talk about interesting things, theology, doctrine, kind of what you're doing here. And I got to say, too, for you, man, I've listened to your Doug interview. I was walking by when Jason was here. You got a natural talent for this, man.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, the voice, the timing, the questions, it's thought out. I hope you do really well in this podcast because it's very good.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's kind of funny. Most of our episodes are, me, my pastor, and then Lutheran John out in Nebraska. And they normally don't know the main topic until I show up.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, and one of our running jokes is we have the main topic up front, and then the back half a lot of times we'll do listener questions, and we call it the Inquisition. And it's, you submit questions, and we answer them on the fly, and honestly, it's not that different from the rest of the show.
Right.
Because these guys don't know what we're talking about until I walk in the door a lot of times.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's one of those things I definitely want to get more guests on.
Yeah.
But when you're balancing schedules between three different people...
Yeah.
Plus business things and blah, blah, blah. It's been a little more difficult for the last year or so. I think the last guest I had, other than my youth minister that one time, before this week, was like Holly Pivick in February,
yeah,
or something like that. Which was it was Holly Pivick and Doug Guyvett. If you heard of sure, their book about the NAR,
yeah,
and it was a fantastic interview.
I have to go back and listen to that.
They're doing really good work, and I think they've written 3 or 4 books about the New Apostolic Reformation.
It's crazy
and
stuff, man.
And it's even handed. It's not, you know, wild eyed, hair on fire. They're taking over the church and all that kind of stuff.
But they're just truthful about what it is, and even that is pretty outlandish in some stuff.
Exactly. It's truthful. This is really problematic, and this is what they're saying.
Yeah.
There you go. Do with it what you will.
Yeah.
But anyway, thank you.
Yeah, Todd Bentley's still a forefather apostle in NAR. They never officially,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
I just say that. I've been rallying against Todd Bentley since 2008, and he's trying to make
before
a comeback.
Before it was cool.
Yeah, before it was cool. That's right. I'm the hipster anti-Todd Bentley. Jeez.
Now take a sip of your IPA.
That's right.
Well, all right, Greg, where can people find you?
Oh, you can find me at dmwpodcast.com, Dead Men Walking Podcast, anywhere on social media except Twitter, real DMW Podcast, but dmwpodcast.com. Go check us out. You can search the merch. You can leave a comment. Leave us a voicemail. People like doing that on the website. You can leave me a voicemail. If it's a funny one or it's entertaining, I make sure we post it on social media so you guys get some credit. And always give us constructive criticism, too, trying to make the show better. So thanks for having me, Cody.
Yeah,
love what you're doing here, brother.
Thanks for coming on. And likewise, thanks for listening to Westminster Effects Doxology Podcast. Go love God, love your neighbor, and make some music. We'll see you next time.